nationwide. We bring you latest current issues, discussions and information. Nationwide on Radio Miraya.
Hello, good evening and welcome to Nationwide program on Radio Miraya. Today we are having a discussion from our guest from the World Bank, and we're going to discuss a topic on prospects for economic development in South Sudan. My name is Luca Dugumwel, and our guest in the studio from World Bank is Mr. Firas Raad, the World Bank Country Manager. Before we allow him to speak to us on the topic of today, just a little background that World Bank is a partner in the development of South Sudan. They are engaged in many activities, and we shall learn more from Mr. Raad later, issues on agriculture development and many other things. So, and this evening we welcome him to have a discussion on prospects for economic development in South Sudan. Mr. Raad, you're welcome.
Thank you, Luca. It's great to be with you this evening.
Right, thank you very much. World Bank, just like everyone of us, was part of, a witness to the day when South Sudan became independent 11 years ago. In fact, the Vice President of World Bank, Obiageli Ezekweli, was here. And that day, from what you wrote, Mr. Raad, she was so hopeful about the country, high hopes about the country, a country with potential, resources available, citizens that can foster development of the country. And 11 years later, of course, along the way, there was conflict in 2013, 2016, which really affected development of the country. But 2018 was peace agreement, and up to date, we're still trying to implement the agreement, which has been extended by 2 years. And we still have hope that there is a chance to see development away from destruction that may happen since the independence of the country. So I would like to ask you, Mr. Raad, what is your understanding of opportunities that come with the peace agreement in terms of development and economic growth for South Sudan?
So thank you, Luca. I think what you recounted points to the importance of peace and stability as being a cornerstone for economic growth and development. And in a general sense, this is very important for all countries. It allows for forward planning by government authorities. It allows for the delivery of essential basic services. It allows government and communities to invest in health, education, and infrastructure. And allows for the private sector to invest in creating jobs. Now, at times, as you know, peace and stability are not sufficient guarantees because you have natural disasters and you have global pandemics, as we saw recently. But really, peace and stability are fundamental requirements for long-term sustained development and growth. And this has been borne out by experiences across the world. And we saw this in post-war Europe and in Asia and in countries that have experienced civil wars. So in Asia, you have the examples of Japan, South Korea, Vietnam. In the Middle East, my home region, you have Oman that had a civil war in the 1960s. And look at it now. Closer to South Sudan, you have the example of Rwanda. So I think for South Sudan to be able to turn the development corner, as I recently wrote in an article, I think it must experience a long period of peace and stability. And this is what we're hoping that the end of the roadmap would lead to, that it would lead to the management of the end of the transitional period, and South Sudan would exit its condition now of being in this deep fragility trap.
All right, Mr. Raad, as well, in connection to that, there is the revised national development strategy for South Sudan, which has set ambitious goals for the growth of the economy. How can the World Bank help achieve these goals?
So, Luca, around the world, we help in two ways. Essentially, we provide financing and we provide knowledge services or analytical advisory services. In terms of financing, in the case of South Sudan, we provide grant financing to the government, and we also provide financing to the private sector. So we have an arm of the World Bank Group that invests in growing businesses. So that is one channel. The other channel is writing reports, providing advice and counsel to government on different reforms that it may take to promote economic growth, job opportunities, investment and trade, and so forth. So around the world, this is typically how we operate. Now, in the case of South Sudan, we have a lot of financing flowing into different sectors, and we support the government meet their financing needs to cover important priorities. So, for example, we are doing some work in the area of governance, supporting public financial management reforms. We are doing work in the agricultural sector, supporting the Ministry of Agriculture. In the area of social protection, we are providing assistance for vulnerable families and households across the country. So typically, this is how we would support the government. So all of the operations that we are involved in now, and the ones in the pipeline, I think will support the goal and the objectives of the revised national development strategy. And as you know, there are five clusters in that strategy. The economy, services, infrastructure, institutions, and you also have youth and women, so the inclusion cluster. But across all of those clusters, we are engaged, and we hope to support the government in meeting its goals that it has set out for itself.
In your article on turning the development corner in South Sudan, what will it take? There's an article you wrote on that. And you said that the triple nexus of peace, humanitarian development, assistance, or what is known as the PAD agenda. Could you elaborate more on this?
In my article, I just wanted to say I focused on several key messages. The first is that completing the roadmap successfully for South Sudan is really critical, so it can begin exiting, as I said, this deep fragility trap that has fallen into. So that is message number one. The second message is that the country has the natural resources to begin pulling itself out of this trap and needs an integrated strategy to do so. The third is that there are several key priority areas that it should focus on to make this dream a reality. And one of these priority areas, I think, is the building of strong economic institutions. So the Ministry of Finance and Planning, for example, the Bank of South Sudan, the National Audit Chamber, the National Revenue Authority. There is on the books a law to establish a public procurement and asset disposal authority that still needs to be operationalized. So I think making sure that, you know, these institutions are well-staffed and are capable institutions is essential for stabilizing the macro economy, you know, making sure that the exchange rate is stable, for example, making sure that there's good fiscal policy, that the budget is formulated on time, it's executed on time, civil servants are paid, and so forth, and that you have good and sound financial sector policy. So I think for me, you know, those were the key messages coming out of my article, I could elaborate a little bit more on different aspects of those messages.
All right, we shall continue with that after a break. So, dear listener, you're listening to Nationwide Program, and I'm Lucas Gumwell. We are hosting Mr. Firas Raad from World Bank, a World Bank country manager for South Sudan. And as you listen to him, we are discussing about prospects for economic development in South Sudan. And as he mentioned, the positive ways that this country can turn around the challenges that it has been facing to become a country that can be mentioned as one of the fast-growing economies. But how can this happen with a nation or a population that is highly illiterate? When we come back, we'll discuss more on this.
Nationwide, we bring you latest current issues, discussions, and information. Nationwide on Radio Miraya.
Welcome back to Nationwide. I'm Lucas Gumwell, and we are discussing on the prospects for economic development in South Sudan with Mr. Firas Raad, the World Bank country manager for South Sudan. Now, we know that South Sudan has about 70% illiteracy rate, and that means the human capital is very, very low, one of the lowest in the world. With this, Mr. Raad, how do we achieve the goals of economic development?
So thank you for that question, Luca. I think in this area there is no magic bullet that will catapult South Sudan into a very competitive position with advanced economies. But what South Sudan can do at the moment is really invest in human capital, and this is a long-term investment, and this really revolves around education. And it should really begin the process now. I think investing in general education reforms, that would feed into higher education. As you know, illiteracy is very high in this country. About 70%, 60% of school-aged children are not enrolled in schools. So the challenge is tremendous. And as I've mentioned elsewhere, other countries, it took a couple of decades really to make a big impact on illiteracy. So I think having this in mind, that you need to start on this very important long-term investment now. And it will involve different things. You know, it will involve teachers, making sure that teaching effectiveness is there. It will involve the school environment itself, making sure that the principals, the administrators, everyone responsible for the school environment are aligned with what the goals should be. And then the curriculum itself, that curriculum has to be up to date, and making sure that children are learning. And, you know, they go from grade to grade, and there is a way for the system to verify that that child is actually learning. And that's where testing comes in. And I think testing should be standardized across the country. Now, the challenges are great. So that vision should be out there. And the health authorities, with the support of the donor community, development partners, should work towards that goal. And as I mentioned, South Korea from 1945 to 1970, it took them 25 years to make a big dent in the literacy rate. So, you know, we should have that long-term ambition agenda in the back of our minds, and then work seriously day in, day out to make that vision a reality.
And we are 11 years old, and with the challenges, as you mentioned, you said other countries turned this around, like South Korea. What about us? If you look forward to the time it may take, and some ways you've mentioned, like in the education sector, what can be done, how long do you think it can take for some of the things to be achieved?
Well, you know, there are long-term priorities and there are short-term priorities.
Certainly,
you know. And so education, for example, is not something that you can change within a year. You can put in policies and infrastructure and train, but to see the outcomes that you are looking for, it takes a while. You know, even curriculum reform takes several years. So this is a long-term agenda, but what's important is that the work really begins now to change things around. Now, what can be done in the short term, I think, is South Sudan capitalizing on its natural endowments. You know, it has great wealth in terms of natural resources, the land itself, how much agricultural land is available, the livestock that is available, the wildlife, the natural landscapes. You have one of the largest migrations in the world, the Tiang, the antelope, the white-eared cob. And you have trade connections with so many countries on the continent. So I think these kinds of agendas could be used very quickly to enable higher level growth and job creation. And the challenge, you know, is again how you diversify away from oil, so it's not the main generator of jobs or the generator of fiscal revenues, and then how you can use that oil, in the words of the founder of South Sudan, Dr. John Garang, to be the catalyst, to be the engine of growth in the agricultural sector. And I think the challenge is to use that underground wealth, you know, the oil and the minerals, to create above the ground wealth. And what I mean is human capital, a trained workforce that can compete with other countries in the world, and infrastructure that is modern and serving the people of South Sudan, be it transport, be it energy, be it, you know, water or digital development in that area. And on this last sector, we are quite proud that we are now working with the government very closely to ensure that there is greater access to high-speed internet to all of the communities around the country, in addition to also engaging on energy and transport and other sectors. So I think that's what can be done in the short term.
Yes, and all these are made possible when there is also money, when there are finances. And in your article, you mentioned public financial management as one of the ways. Could you expound on this, given the fact that this cannot be denied, that we are not also doing well in how we manage our finances, how we manage resources, like from the oil income and other revenues? So how does this happen without enough finances?
I think the important point is not the volume of finances now at the moment, but from a development perspective, what we are emphasizing is how those public finances are best used and managed and deployed across the country. Because, you know, at one point in time, Luca, South Sudan was not a low-income country. It was sort of a lower middle-income country because of all of the wealth it had. But because it veered off, as you mentioned, into two civil wars, it actually fell into a low-income fragility trap. So the question is, how can it use its wealth,
yeah,
its public finances, to best provide a government that can provide effective services to the people, can invest in infrastructure, can help support the private sector grow and create jobs. But the essential thing is how the government can structure its public financial system so there is predictability, there is transparency, there is a budget that's formulated every year on time, the budget is executed based according to the law, and then there is accountability with the financial statements of the Ministry of Finance and Planning being audited on a yearly basis by the National Audit Chamber. And you know, you could have a procurement authority as well that is set up and doing procurement in an effective, efficient, and transparent way. So that's what's important, I think, for the effective functioning of government. And it will give the citizenry, it will give the donor community, it would give everybody the confidence that the government is moving in the right direction and leading by example. I think that's an important point.
Some of the things that are more practical or short-term, like you mentioned, like infrastructure, there is one that you mentioned on oil for like the development, using oil to develop infrastructure, like the road constructions that are happening in some parts of the country, the national highways, but also the rural areas, roads that can make farmers access markets. This is a challenge. Like recently, just last week, from Magui is one of the areas that is very rich in agriculture. They have agricultural produce, but they are not able to bring them to the markets in Juba and other towns. So this short term, I mean, what are ways that such issues can be resolved, such issues can be handled quickly, so that as we look forward to the bigger part of development, there are certain things happening that we can see practically.
So this raises a very important point, Luke, and thank you for asking this this question. We think that agriculture, for it to be transformed or for us together to help trigger a positive revolution or transformation in the agriculture sector, it will need the support of the other sectors as well, as you rightly pointed out, because farmers and local communities cannot get their goods to market if there aren't any good quality rural roads, or they can't export those products if you don't have an infrastructure in place to allow them to go to the border, to cross the border, or to fly out of Juba Airport to other countries. So a modern transportation network is very important. Access to electricity is very important. Access to information, you know, just to be able to access the internet, to be able to compete or sell your products using e-commerce platforms. So the surrounding infrastructure around agriculture is incredibly important. And I think also, Luca, there are opportunities to bring the private sector in to help build some of that infrastructure. So, you know, sometimes the private sector can come and engage in public-private partnerships with the government in different sectors, and we've seen this in the transport sector, in the power sector, in the water sector around the world. There are examples where if the government, through its public financing, can't cover all of the needs, then it invites the private sector to come in. You know, even in looking at transport on waterways, looking at transport in the air, you know, aviation, even looking at Juba Airport, you know, upgrading the airport by bringing in the private sector. So there are different opportunities for that to happen. But what the private sector will tell you is that they need, again, peace and stability and predictability, reliability, and for the rule of law. So I think that's also a challenge now facing the country.
All right. Thank you very much, Mr. Rad. Dear listener, you are tuned into Radio Maria, and this is Nationwide. Our topic of today is prospects for economic development in South Sudan. And if you would like to participate in the program, you can also join us to ask questions or make your comments. You can put your questions to Mr. Rad, who is the World Bank country manager for South Sudan, and is here in the studio with us discussing ways that South Sudan can turn a new page. What will it take is what we are discussing here. So for us to, for you to be part of the discussion, call us on 091-206-2950 for women, and for men 091-206-2079. Or if you want to text your message, please do it by dialing 0912-177-141. As we continue with the discussion, and as you'll join us in the in this discussion, we would like also to look at the citizens' participation in all this. It's also clear that for very many policies that the government is implementing towards the development of the country, there's hardly any participation of citizens, of the people. So would I also know how, I mean, ways that the people of the country can participate in the development? What role do they have to play in realizing all the issues that you have just discussed?
So I think, Luca, it's a very important point, because at one level, you know, citizen engagement, citizen participation really strengthens the social contract between society and the state. And at its basic level, the state legislatures and the national legislature, you know, those bodies are representatives of the people and should be engaged in all of the key legislation. They have to be, because a lot of them, especially at a national level, sign off on that legislation. So the consultative process should be there in developing key policies. A lot of them, as I said, are enshrined in legislation that goes forward. I think more broadly, you know, the government, when it comes up with policy directions that it wants to take, I think it's very important to communicate that in a public way, through radio stations like these or through television stations. normal outreach activities on the ground, going to the grassroots. But I think what the development experience has shown is that if there are reforms that are being envisaged, it's always good to have an effective communication strategy in place to make sure that when something is designed as a policy, it then can be implemented because people have already been made aware of what it's trying to achieve and you know what the possible consequences could be. You know, I give you a quick example from another country context. Whenever you have subsidies that are non-targeted and like a general fuel subsidy, and because the situation doesn't allow for its continuation, and the advice is to lift that subsidy because you want to better target it towards the vulnerable and the poor, you have to have a very good communication strategy because otherwise there will be too much blowback.
Yeah.
And I think that's very important. You raised the question recently of the health sector, or I heard that was being mentioned on the news broadcast. So there, you know, there will be a responsibility by the government to take over some of these hospitals, and so communicating that, I think, in a clear way is very important.
All right, thank you very much. Going to listen also to the audience outside there who would like to be part of the discussion. Hello, Radio Miraya. Hello.
Good evening.
Good evening to you.
Loba.
Yes, your name and where you're calling from. I'm all right.
I'm Levi from Maridi.
Levi, welcome to Nationwide.
I have a little bit of frustration and as well as maybe a question and way forward.
Give us a
you
question.
See, South Sudan, we have been hearing these words. We have been hearing, oh, this is happening so that people come out from these situations we are experiencing. But to our surprise, these things just end up on the air. And I don't know really what is going to happen different this time around with the World Bank intervening or trying to solve some of these problems. What is new?
Okay, thank you very much, Levi. Mr. Rad.
This is not the first time. This is not the first time. We are growing old in these situations. These words are filling our ears and our minds, but we don't see the reality on the ground.
Nothing on the ground.
Completely nothing on the ground. Maybe we hear these things just on the airwaves like this, and it end up there. We don't see the practical things on the ground. How long shall we continue with this? Yeah.
Thank you, Levi from Maridi, right?
Okay.
All right. Hello, Radio Miraya.
Hello, Luca. Good evening.
Good evening to you.
This is Mr. Gecko from Tongping.
Gecko from Tongping. Yes, welcome.
Yeah, thank you very much. I really appreciate the program, and I welcome guests in the studio. Greetings to all the listeners of Radio Miraya this time. I just want to be straight. You know, Luca, the issue of South Sudan economy is a man-made disaster, and I don't know how equipped is the World Bank and the IMF to be transparent and to be accountable, because they have been supporting South Sudan for a long time and there is no outcome. The citizens are seeing nothing. Just we hear good news, but in practical we get nothing. And the issue of South Sudan need to be accountable and transparency. So how quick is the World Bank on this issue of individual benefiting from the fund and the one supporting the collapse of the economy so that the vulnerable community, the vulnerable citizen will not see anything and will not speak up their right.
All right.
We have agriculture release. We have nothing to do, but they have knowledge. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you, Gecko. Right, from the two callers, we'll first get back to Mr. Rad. The first caller, Levi, from Maridi in Western Equatoria, one of the areas that is rich in agriculture. And from your article as well, South Sudan utilizes about 4% of the arable land, which means much of the vast areas of South Sudan are not, there's no farming happening. And he's saying that most of the things we only hear on air, but they are not practically happening on ground. Just something we mentioned earlier about citizens' participation in the development. That's from Levi. Another question from Gecko is directly to World Bank. We agree, as you mentioned, that this country is rich in resources, but its utilization is still poor. World Bank and other partners are trying so much to support the development as well. But because of some issues like mismanagement of resources, how is World Bank equipped to tackle some of the challenges in the development?
So thank you, Luca, for summarizing those questions, and I thank Levy and Gecko for raising them. Let me just say at the outset that I believe, as somebody who has worked in development for 20-25 years, that changing the lives of people on the ground in any specific country context is primarily a national challenge and responsibility. The leaders, the members of the government, the members of society at large, civil society, the private sector, and so on, the country as a whole really is responsible for its own development. And outside actors can only come in and support. Outside actors are not sufficient enough to change things on the ground. So the leadership really, or the initiative, should come from the state itself, the society itself, and working together in charting out a new development pathway ahead. And as I said before and earlier on other occasions, the two wars that we saw in 2013 and 2016 effectively led to a situation in 2018 where the GDP per capita was one-third of what it could have been. So there could have been, as I wrote earlier, a bright future for the first few years, but the circumstances happened in the way they did. And I think going forward now, that's why this message around peace and stability is essential, because without that context, then you can't advance institution development, you can't advance human capital accumulation, you can't invest in institutions and the creation of jobs. So it's very important that I think is understood, that at the end of the day, it's the South Sudanese who will create their own future. And it's only for the friends and the development partners, the donor community, to help that process along. So I am hopeful that development, you know, as I said, trajectory can happen. We have to support South Sudan turn that corner. And it's not going to be easy. As I said, it's going to take a lot of hard work by everyone, primarily the government, to make sure that the right policies are in place to enable that development to happen. And it can happen. It's not impossible. You know, when you go back and you look at Vietnam, how Vietnam was in the 60s and 70s, where it is now. You go back to South Korea in 1950. It was one of the poorest countries in the world. Illiteracy was 70%. They worked on developing their country. In Rwanda, you also had, you know, what you saw in the 1990s. A big genocide, but they were able to pull themselves up out of this fragility trap, and their per capita income now maybe is 5-6 times larger than South Sudan. So you can do it. It will take time, hard work, and perseverance.
All right, thank you. We'll still get back to the callers out there who would like to contribute to the program to ask questions. Hello, Radim Rai.
Yes, how are you?
I'm doing all right. Luca.
Daniel.
Tell me your name.
Daniel,
where are you from?
Moe. Yes, I'm calling from Juba.
Right, Daniel, go ahead.
Yeah, it is a nice discussion, by the way. And a lot of issues related to your discussion. Before you look for the solution to the problem, you first look for who will need the solution.
Okay.
So what trust have you built or have you realized on the ground as partners, partnering with South Sudan, to have your resources continuously provided to the country? Another question is, have you ever asked yourself why a rich nation like South Sudan is being supported by poor nations? So those are the questions I just asked.
That's Daniel. I hope you noted his question. I will take another call before we get back to you. Radim Rai.
Yes, good evening, Luca.
Good evening to you.
Oh, you are connected, Jacob Adil from Gudeli.
Jacob Adil, welcome.
Okay, thank you very much. This situation we are in, and the other Sudanese try to help South Sudan, and South Sudan continues suffering indeed, because as we know, the crisis of this moment.
We'll allow Mr. Rad to respond to what Daniel raised, a rich kid in rags that always looks for support. specific, I think he was talking about how you're channeling your support.
I think I got a first question, and I'll the second question. I'll take take a stab at it. On the first question as to how we partner locally. So as I said, we primarily work with government. That's our mandate globally. We are the governments of the world are shareholders in the World Bank Group. We did, over the past few years, when it was difficult to work with government directly, we worked through third-party implementing agencies. So with the government's agreement and blessing, we would take our financing and work with an implementation agency to provide healthcare services, to invest in supporting vulnerable households, and so forth. Recently, we made a shift in our overall orientation and decided to promote a government-led implementation model. So we would say to government, now you are in charge of implementing these World Bank financing projects. And so I think this shift has really helped build capacity in different ministries. So they begin to take charge of these projects and they provide the services directly to the people, and would like to see more of that. I think having the government out in front and supporting these kinds of services is very important.
And is that having an impact? Do you see some change happening with giving them to own the...
We've just begun that that change over the past year. So we have taken four projects, or now five, to the board. And now we are moving into implementation.
Which ones have you studied?
In public financial management is purely government led at the moment. We have two projects with the Ministry of Agriculture, and now with the Ministry of Gender and Child and Social Welfare. So we are moving in that direction, and I think that's how we'd like to partner with the government and the people of South Sudan in the lead and responsible for implementing their own development projects.
All right, we shall be back shortly. We're taking a break and we'll come back to continue with the discussion.
Nationwide, your daily current affairs program on Radio Miraya.
You're listening to Radio Miraya, the voice of peace.
Welcome back. This is Nationwide, and we are discussing prospects for economic development in South Sudan. Mr. Firas Raad, the World Bank Country Manager, is our guest in the studio. You have a chance to still call us and ask your question. Early this year, Mr. Raad, you mentioned in one of the occasions that South Sudan economy, you are projecting it likely to hit 1.5% growth or increase. It's several months now since that time. Could you tell us if this is happening?
So I think, Luca, it's always difficult with projections and forecasts. As you know, you can say something 6 months later when you look back at the year, you're not really sure. I think our general sense is we will see a contraction in the economy. We won't see a positive growth rate. But looking back at what we have experienced in terms of shocks, and so there are multiple shocks that the country faced. The primary one, the big one, was obviously COVID-19, but climate as well. Leading to the flooding, the food insecurity, and then more recently we've had this war in the Ukraine affecting the economy worldwide, and so you have multiple factors that have affected growth. But what's important, as I said again, is stability, using the natural resources, using trade connections to promote a lot of goods and services being imported or exported. And the important one, I think, is being exported. You'd like to, you know, get agricultural products, for example, exported across the border. And I think using those kinds of policies would help, boost boost the growth rate. Obviously, you know, oil revenues and what they can do supports, the fiscal side of things. But I think what's more important sometimes than growth itself are jobs. And, you know, you could have high growth without a lot of job creation, and having jobless growth is not really meaningful. So it's the challenge is how you create meaningful, good-paying jobs for the growing youth population of this country. And agriculture is, you know, one sector that can do so.
Let's get back to some calls. We're going to take about one or two calls in the week, also coming to the end of the program. Hello, Radio Maria.
Luca.
Yes.
It's me, Jacob Odilale from Godelle. I'm coming back again.
All right, Jacob, welcome.
Okay, thank you very much. Because the need of some problem to me.
Sure.
Now, the issue of this crisis of our country, you need the responsibilities of the country leaders. Even if we need support to other people to come in, and our leaders, they had to support this country, it's far away. The country is still suffering. As I know, even if other organizations or other countries support South Sudan and South Sudan and need money to do its own talent because we have a lot of resources. But due to the fail of our leaders, do the things to support their people. That is, lead us down as crisis of this economy. As we know, our people are suffering indeed. That one cannot help us. If other people come in and we are not trying to do our thing, then we do nothing. Thank you.
All right. Thank you very much, Jacob, for your input. You can still give us your call, ask a question or a comment before we get back to Mr. Rad for the final comment. Hello, Radio Maria.
Luka Lugumur.
Yes.
Good evening.
Good evening to you, sir.
So, you are connecting with Guy Kwan. Guy Kwan, yeah.
Where are you calling from?
I'm just calling from Bantu, TUC.
All right. Guy, we are not able to continue with you. Mr. Rad, time is up. Sorry, we are not going to pick any other call. The last caller also said something that you mentioned earlier, that despite support that the international community may provide, World Bank and all other partners, it's the will of the government of South Sudan and its people that can make more difference. With this, as we come to an end, would like to give you a chance to wrap up on your article on prospects for economic development in South Sudan, the way forward.
Thanks once again, Luca, for having me on your program, and it's a pleasure always to be with you and to exchange views with your listeners through this program. I think I'd like to just, you know, reemphasize again the ever-important message of peace and stability. And that, I think, is the paramount challenge ahead of the country. Because once you have that building block in place, then you can really use that as a platform to launch your development strategies going forward. So peace and stability, and then you work on institutions, you work on your infrastructure, your economic management, your human capital, the creation of jobs. But that cornerstone, peace and stability, is so essential to allow you to enable the kind of growth that you need to reach the vision that the country has for itself.
Thank you very much. And we have come to the end of Nationwide. From myself, Luca Gumwell, our guest has been Mr. Firas Rad from the World Bank country manager. He's the country manager of South Sudan. We've been discussing prospects for economic development in South Sudan. Thank you, dear listener, for having been part of the show. Thank you, Mr. Rad.
Thank you, Luca.
Nationwide, your daily current affairs program on Radio Miraya.